this week on the Dry Bar Comedy Podcast.
I definitely underthink stuff. You ever walk into a garage sale and realize it's not a garage sale at all? Just a dude sitting in his garage reading the paper? That's happened to me twice in real life. I didn't even catch on right away. He goes, can I help you? He's like, nah, I'm just looking. It's okay, I'm gonna look around. Check out your personal stuff for no reason at all. That was a garage sale in my head for a full minute. That is a long minute for the other guy. What did he even think I was doing? Like it was the most uncommitted home invasion ever. Like I just wandered in. I'm actually gonna browse, see if your stuff's worth going to prison, so have a seat. And then I didn't rob him. How disappointing for him. How embarrassed would you be if people showed up to rob you and then just passed on your junk? Like, I'm not going to jail over this garbage. Reinvest.
Well, as you saw from that clip, our guest today is the very funny Colin Moulton. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm stoked. We had trouble scheduling it, but it worked out like fortuitous.
Taylor said it went back and forth a few times.
Yeah.
We probably had four or five different times and or days.
So here's the deal. So I was in Dallas or I was flying to Dallas from Atlanta and it looked like I had a 10-minute window to catch my flight for last night to get here by midnight, to get to Salt Lake by midnight. And I went on and there was one seat left on the morning flight out of Dallas. So I rather than running all that, I put myself on that flight and I couldn't. And so I went to the desk. I go, hey, I was talking to somebody earlier about getting on the morning flight. And they're like, oh yeah, let me put you on there. Bang. She does it. And so I made I got a hotel in Dallas. I spent the night in Dallas, chilled out, nice hotel, and then flew in, landed at 10:45, jumped in a rental car, drove down here.
You were perfect timing. That's amazing.
Perfect timing. And showed up right on time.
Yeah.
And you're here to record another special. You said you're out of here right after that's done, right?
Doing the special tonight. And I'm excited about that. And then I'm going to leave in the wee hours of the morning.
Does Utah make you nervous? Is that why?
Yeah,
you're getting out of here.
I don't know what happened if I hung around too long. I really like it in a lot of ways. And I'm like, gosh, you know, I've always done that. Like everywhere I go around the country when I'm, you know, 25 years of touring, and I always come home and tell my wife, I'm like, you know, I think we should move there.
Oh yeah,
no matter where it is. Yeah, just a random town in Kansas. You wouldn't even believe how cool this place is. Houses are $7,000. Awesome.
I arrived. They elected me mayor.
Yeah. Like, we could buy one for $7,000, and then in 4 years we could sell it for $11,000. I mean, come on, let's do this.
Yeah. I've realized whenever my wife and I go on vacation, she'll be like, I could live here. She'll say that same thing.
Right.
But I started telling her, it's just because you don't have a job while you're here.
Right.
Like, it's just the fact that you feel free because you're not working right now.
Yeah. Vacation's not a job.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've gotten away from your 7 cats.
Yeah, we've gotten away from our cats.
You have a lot of cats?
Well, not 7. That was an exaggeration.
That was
an exaggeration.
It's not that much of an exaggeration.
Are you mad about his cats, Taylor?
That's a 25% exaggeration.
Okay, so
I don't do math.
What do you got? You have
4.5 cats?
Yeah, 4.5. We have 1 2-legged.
Because of my lack of education, so we had to cut your cat in half.
One's a fox.
We do have 5 cats.
One's a fox, is that what he said?
Yeah.
Hey, why do we have another cat? That's not a cat.
Five is, that's an impressive amount. I don't think.
Well, Taylor likes to bring this up with every guest we have.
I'm sure the olfactory experience is impressive.
We take pride in, we ask everybody who comes over, does it smell like cats in here? We're very conscious of it.
You take pride in asking that question?
Yeah, take pride.
And they say yes.
We have an embroidered on pillows in our living room. The old Macon tradition.
Show it on the old family.
We do have, I mean, the issue is, are you a cat person at all, Colin, or no?
We have a couple, yeah. I mean, they're around. We have, you know, everything. Dogs, chickens, bunnies, the whole, you know.
You got a whole thing going.
Yeah. Whole farm, yeah.
What's your favorite of those animals?
Dog. I have a Great Pyrenees.
Okay. We have one dog, too.
She's my baby. She's huge. But I got her when she was 4 days old because we got 4 of them. To save him from this guy at a chicken farm. It's a long story. It's a whole podcast. This guy's a whole podcast. But the guy was like, you have to help me, Paimon. And his son had left him a chicken farm. Anyway, so he has all these Great Pyrenees livestock guardians, and they're breeding, and they don't take care of their young because they're working dogs, so they're burying them in holes. So he's like,
whoa.
So he's like so he's got all these puppies, and they're all like a few days old, and he doesn't know what to do with them, and he's bottle feeding them. And so my daughter was in the vet program, and she's like, I'll take them. So we took four. And then we lost one, and then later we ended up getting homing out two, and then we kept one. But the one that we kept was one that I had been feeding every morning at 3 a.m. and 8 a.m. and then in the afternoons.
Wow.
And so she imprinted on me, I guess is what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And, dude, when I walk in the house, she's like, you know, it's you. She just stands next to me no matter where I am all the time. It's such a feeling.
Does it ever get too much, though?
No, not for me.
Okay.
I've been married 17 years, so I need somebody to just turn toward me, you know.
Because we have a dog, too, and it's more my wife's dog. But sometimes her name's Pippa, and she'll just stare at my wife.
What kind of dog?
She's a Bernedoodle.
A Bernedoodle.
Yeah.
What's the Berna?
Bernese Mountain Dog.
So it's a big doodle.
Yeah. She's, I don't know much about her, to be honest.
That's a 100-pound dog.
No, she's not that. I think she's like 60 pounds or something like that.
And she's fully grown.
And she's doesn't shed because she has the poodle in her, I guess.
Yeah.
Hypoallergenic is what my wife told me.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. No.
When you have, you know, 23 cats, you gotta cut down on the hair as much as possible.
That is true. It just started getting warm, so it's shedding season right now, and that is a rough time.
Let's get a running counter of the amount of cats Jordan has and just show it ticking up.
It's always there. Click while you're doing a podcast and your life changes.
Oh no, my wife's got another one.
Where are you right now? I'm in the middle of filming.
We legit fostered, because my wife, I do like cats, but she fostered a litter that what's the Humane Society?
I know what you mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They take care of them?
And I knew for sure we weren't giving them all back.
No way.
We only gave three of them back. So
How many?
There were five. Oh, so okay. We already had three cats, though. We were fostering this litter, and then we got another. I promise my house does not smell like cats.
No, I've been, and I can bear witness. He takes pride in asking if his house smells like cats.
Do you have one of those boxes that like seals in the smell?
We do. We have, they're called litter robots.
Right.
That spin, and you don't have to scoop. That's like,
oh, I want
if we had to scoop, we wouldn't have
50, 60 bucks. What are they?
No, it's they're
it's embarrassing.
They're embarrassingly expensive.
There's something that's passed down from generation to generation. It's made by blacksmith.
My grandkids will have this. I don't want to. You really want to know how much it is?
Should I know? You shouldn't say it out loud. Are you gonna get in trouble?
By who?
Family? Somebody who knows what's really happening?
Why we asked for that money?
Dad, why you're 50,000 in debt? We had to buy another litter robot, so we're not going to be able to make the mortgage. Yeah.
I did start a GoFundMe for another litter robot.
Crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we have the calendar.
Hey, you don't want our house to smell like cats. Neither do we.
You want me to stop asking that question?
Yeah.
Pony up.
I think it was about $500 for one of those.
Okay.
I'm not trying to flex.
All right.
No.
Budgeted.
Or ask for help with lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
So it still needs litter though, right? It's not a...
Yeah, so all you have to do is it's kind of big also. It's this big like circular thing where it rotates and it will filter out the cat stuff.
And the cats just go in there and they do the thing.
They do their thing.
They're cool going in there. Nobody gets caught in the rotation.
And it does take a little while for them to learn. It'll sense them and stop if they sense a cat.
Oh, good,
in there.
Good. Yeah.
So they'll go and it'll wait. I think it's like 7 minutes, and it will do its thing.
Right.
But the cats do like to look in and be like, "What's happening in here?"
Oh,
but it will stop.
At that point, it seems almost feasible to completely toilet train the cats.
They can
figure out that.
Some people do that. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that seems a little flusher too.
Yeah.
They can. The strong ones.
My cats aren't smart enough. I don't think we have that.
Oh, okay.
the wise breed to do that. But
you don't want, if you've got six smart cats in your house.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst. They'll gang up.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll band together.
Yeah, that's not, yeah.
For sure.
They already have too much power as it is.
Right.
We tried getting one of those, what are those called? Roombas, like the things that vacuum on their own.
Yeah.
But it just wouldn't, because the cats would just go stop it.
They'd attack it.
Really? Yeah. Or they would press the button where the one's supposed to go and it would be going. We're like, where? There were a couple days where we didn't know where it was.
You put? Did you put missing posters like for a cat around the city?
Yeah, it's gonna be up here on the thing too with the cat counter where find my Roomba.
That guy without cats is looking. He has a missing Roomba.
He's got a GoFundMe for his Roomba.
No, there was a while where it's like we didn't set it off to go and it's not there anymore, and I think it was underneath a bed in a guest room or something.
Jammed underneath the litter robot.
Yeah, this where like we end up taking it back.
The litter robot sucked it up and like rotated it.
Pull out the drawer. There whoa.
Battle bots.
Found it.
That's funny. I have a Chihuahua mix. It's okay. we don't know what it's mixed because we adopted it when it was an older dog. It's an older dog.
So he had forgotten by that time?
Couldn't remember. It's like
what are you?
He's like Jason Bourne. I don't know.
Can't remember my family.
I didn't know you had a little dog.
But that'll be a good dog.
You don't seem loving enough to have a...
Yeah, you seem like a cat guy. Or a fish. Fish more.
Yeah, you're like a fish guy.
I love fish. I had sushi last night. No joke. Yeah. Conveyor belt sushi. our dog is basically like a cat. It hardly ever makes noise, and it will just loves sitting there and watching you come sit on your lap like it's like a...
I like that.
It's like a lap dog.
We have a dog that we thought was a Chihuahua. We got him at a rescue or whatever, you know, pound, and they said Chihuahua because we're in California, so anything this big or smaller is a Chihuahua, and to them. So I liked him. He was really cool. He didn't have the apple head, and his eyes were like amber beautiful, and he seemed really cool. And he was like how you're describing. He just quiet and just sits there. and really loving, cool dog. And so we got him because my daughter wanted a Chihuahua. And then I'm on the road a few weeks later, and I'm talking to some comic. I can't remember who it was now. And I said, yeah, we just got a dog. He goes, yeah, my family used to raise dogs. I go, yeah. What kind of dog is it? I go, it's a Chihuahua. And I showed him pictures, and he goes, that's a rat terrier. And I was like, no, it's a Chihuahua, because that's what they told me. It was a Chihuahua. He goes, my family, remember I told you they raised dogs? We raised rat terriers my whole life. That's a rat terrier. Oh, I was like, funny. Really? So I started looking into it, and sure enough, that's a full-on rat terrier.
Yeah.
Do they look, I don't really know what a rat terrier, do they look similar?
Yeah, for sure.
Did you break the news to your dog?
To your dog.
We still haven't told him.
Not her, dog.
Dog.
Yeah, we still haven't told him yet. He identifies as a Chihuahua.
Yeah, you don't want to ruin his whole identity. His
pronouns are yip and yap.
Over a mislabeling.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, we've got a short amount of time, relatively.
We do?
Well, just for the amount of the questions that we have
for the
about
purposes
you.
Of this edit. We have a very short amount of time.
But I want to hear a little bit about your comedy origins and you know how you found your way eventually to the Dry Bar stage. Let's start with the origins.
The origins of how I got into comedy?
Yeah.
A woman that I was living with and enjoying being engaged to that I didn't end up marrying. We were still friends, but her mom, we lived in Hollywood, and her mom and I and her, we went to the Laugh Factory, and it was that night was Bob Marley, Dane Cook, and Pablo Francisco were the main kind of guys there, and they were just popping then. It was like 98, and she her mom after the show was like, those guys, that's what you have, that thing, I want to hang out with you. Like, that's why I was thought they were funny. You should be doing that. And I was like, what? And I'd always loved comedy, but I didn't know you were allowed to do it. I thought somebody was supposed to anoint you, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't get that. I was like, what do you mean? She goes, you got to just go do it. And I'm like, how? And her brother-in-law ran went to a comedy class and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Over in Santa Monica one time and knew a guy and blah, blah, blah. So she was like, if you try to get on stage every chance you can, I'll support you for a year. If I'll help you. You just got to try to get on. You just got to be on stage every chance you can.
Wow.
And so I did. And then eventually the relationship changed and I took off. I hit the road in like 6 months. Within 6 months, I was on the road featuring.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
And headlining one-nighters. Crazy really one-nighters, like triple runs fast. And stuff. Uh-huh. I was headlining within, I don't know, man, a couple months. I mean, he wasn't really paying a lot of attention to who was filling the bill, you know. But yeah, man, I was featuring right away. So I never hosted on the road.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's cool in some ways, but but I had been, I told you before, I had been off camera, that I had been a mobile disc jockey before, so I was really comfortable on the microphone.
That's
so,
right, right.
Yeah, so I actually liked hosting, I found out later, when I started doing my own, producing my own shows, bring my own feature, no host, thank you, I would say, and then I would do an hour and whatever, 15, and I would have my feature do 20, and I would go up, but I would start the show, I would go up before, and bring the energy in, and like talk to him, thank him for coming, all that stuff, and give him my friend, and you know, and then do the show. That's how I did my show at comedy clubs for years.
So were you a disc jockey at the time that you went to that first comedy show?
Yeah, so mobile disc jockey.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
Where you have like a, where you borrow your sister's station wagon and you fill it with like equipment that's in these fuzzy black carpet boxes, and you go to weddings and parties and fundraisers, and you
gotcha.
And you, but before you have to meet with them and talk about the event. You know, schedule, and you're, you know, and here you'll be doing this, and then there's the cake cutting, and you know, and then you have your little pack of CDs, and it was CDs, bro. And yeah, man, that was what I was doing. For
any
a long
any
time.
Really crazy stories from your disc jockeying days?
Well, I ran an office. I ended up running an office in Santa Barbara, so I had 10 DJs under me that I had to hire.
Whoa,
and then I would travel to these, because it was a franchise corporation. It was like the only CD-based franchise corporation. There was a cassette tape one that was a little bit different. Yeah, they were like a little more like, my cousin can make it. You know, So it was this bigger group of DJ companies all around. And then we, they would bring me out. We had a couple conventions sometimes I would go to those kind of things and help, you know, help train or, you know, work on the training program stuff because they had all this paperwork. So I had a little bit of a corporate position, but it was more like just because my friend owned the corporate office.
Okay.
But yeah, it was, but I was really into it. I was really good at it.
Interesting.
But the fundraising stuff was pretty cool. And then, okay, so the funniest story from that, Santa Barbara, Cabrillo, man, I don't even remember what it's called. It's been so long. So it was this big place on the beach, you know, and it's like a hotel. It's a hotel, but it has a giant, you know, hotel ballroom, and it's beautiful, and you're right there. And Tito Puentes, one of Tito Puentes' conga players. There's probably 25, so I'm not outing anybody. But so one of his main guys, his daughter got married, and they start, and we're doing, you know, I got, hey, you know, and supposedly Tito was going to be there. I don't even remember if he was, but then they bring a cassette that the guys made of like Tito's music and his music. And like I was supposed to play some of that. And I'm playing all these Latino, you know, rhythm choices and all this stuff. And we got people out there dancing, like really ripping it up. And then I start to pick up on there's some conflict between the husband, the father of the bride and the mother of the bride, because he's there with his new wife and she's 24 and younger than the bride probably. And I mean, things just start getting gnarly, and they're Latin, man. They're like, he's a conga player. They're from South America. So there's going to be a fight. So they start this, it culminated. It all started in the ballroom, like on the first dance. So we just kind of, they were kind of cutting it up before people come out and dance a little during dinner. That was what it was. And then they went and sat down. And then right before we did the first dance, the mom and the new wife start getting into it. And then all of a sudden everybody kind of converges like, world star, you know, and they follow them out into the, and they're like, you can hear all the noise and the calamity and the bride screaming and crying, and out they go into the lobby. And there's big plate glass windows. The wife somehow chucks a bottle right at a full bottle of beer at the wife. She ducks it, bang, shatters a window. and then it's mayhem, just mayhem. Man. People flying around, all people screaming and yelling. And then it just sort of dissipates into this sad people sitting around crying and helping the bride. And then it just sort of like fizzled out after that. It was, no, the cops came. I mean, it was intense.
Were you trying to find music to match the vibes?
Yes, I was like, all right, let's get this thing going. When they came back in, I was like, hey, we can still kind of, and then somebody came up with one of the uncles and said, hey, man, not right now. Trying to do a job,
read
bro.
The room.
Trying to make lemonade out of lemons.
It says there's a cake cutting supposed to happen right now. Yeah. We're still doing that?
Yeah. Trying to make salsa out of peppers. What do you say?
You're the only one keeping this wedding on track.
Yeah, right. Kate Kennedy, get her over there. I don't care if she's crying.
We got a schedule. I'm a professional for crying out loud.
It says right here we're supposed to do the Carter toss. It says it right here.
Yeah. You hired me to do a job. I'm doing my job.
I'm not leaving till we do the Carter toss.
That's wild. Oh, what a fun time.
You know what's crazy is I'm literally just putting together right now that DJ stands for disc jockey.
Oh, come on, man. Are you for real?
I'm serious. I'm 100% serious. That's not a joke.
These Gen Z kids over here.
That's right. There is certain disconnects.
Yeah. No, I knew they were the same thing.
Well, no, because why would you know much about that, right? I mean, in my world, that's every music all came from DJs, so that we knew the term.
Yeah.
But, like, why would you know DJ, right? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. You got Spotify and everything else, unless you go to, like, live the raves or something, which you don't
do. Yeah. Well, I've heard
your
DJ.
Chihuahua to a live rave.
He doesn't look like a rave guy.
I got my Chihuahua.
I'm nodding off a little bit.
If you can think back to, like, 10 minutes ago, what would you have said DJ meant before that?
Do you have an explanation for us? I imagine DJ being the initial, like the first guy ever to DJ a party. Was a dude named DJ.
Yeah.
And then in honor of him.
His name was Abercrombie. Yeah. A real challenge going forward.
Man.
We all do this in honor of the great DJ. The original
DJ.
Yeah, DJ.
Daryl Johnson.
Yeah. Oh. Wow. Well,
do you know what MC stands for?
Master of Ceremonies.
Okay. Yeah. Just have to check a few others off with you to make sure.
Right.
Yeah, well, ceremonies haven't really gone away. But
there still are ceremonies.
Discs aren't quite as big a thing anymore. And jockey is a little bit of an antiquated term.
For sure.
Yeah.
Is it like, almost sounds like an insult.
Yeah.
You get those discs over there, you jockey them. Doesn't it? It's one of those names that sounds weird.
Yeah, because now when I think of jockey, I think of like horse jockeys.
Sure.
That are little small.
Is it a rider of the disc? Is that what disc jockey?
Yeah, I guess he's riding it, jockeying the music. Yeah, because we'd be moving it, you know?
Yeah.
Even in the disc jockey, even in the CD days, because we would have these Denon dual CD mixers and you could pitch bend.
Yeah.
Whoa. I could pitch bend. Yeah,
I can scratch.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was killer.
That's funny.
I remember there used to be a, you know the game Guitar Hero?
Mm-hmm.
Or certainly.
Do you remember DJ Hero?
Yeah, there was DJ Hero for a little while.
It was one of those games that got the most popular, and they're like, we're going to throw everything at this.
And you were aware of that.
But I was like, who is this DJ? I know he's a hero, but I don't know much about him. Yeah, did you ever play that?
My friend had it, and I thought it was so weird. But yeah, you had like little buttons to press and a thing to do this with.
It was a real flash in the pan.
I think that kind of ended the cycle of Guitar Hero stuff. Like that was as high as it got.
It's like jumping the shark.
Yeah, yeah, that one didn't go very far.
DJ'd the hero. That's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's a generation of jumping the shark.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, maybe they should have gone with a more accessible sort of instrument from guitar to band. Like, I don't know, like what?
Clarinet hero.
Flute hero.
Clarinet hero.
Yeah.
Flute hero.
Bagpipe hero.
Just a picture of Ian Anderson. Long hair in the wind.
Yeah, oh, man.
A lot of Jethro Tull on the flute hero. You know that reference?
No. Jethro. Oh, JT?
JT, Tull. Yeah.
The first ever rock band.
Did I make that up? They had a flute, right? Do you know?
Yes, I do know Ian Anderson. I mean, not know him, but I'm a huge fan of Jethro Tull. And,
oh, is that who you referenced first?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't even realize it was Jethro Tull.
Ian Anderson, yeah.
I laughed along because I assumed it was somebody I would know.
Jethro Tull is the name of the band.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of people make up a mistake. Jethro Tull, the guy. But it's Jethro Tull is a name from British folklore.
Oh,
okay. And he was like a Johnny Appleseed.
Oh,
really?
The Jethro Tull. And he was a Johnny Appleseed. Was he
planting apple trees?
not apples. It was like probably potatoes or something, but like something that grows in garbage soil and weather. So they use that as a name for their band. Yeah. So Ian Anderson was actually the guy, and he was like this like really pompous aristocratic kind of sort. And when they remastered the album Teacher, they put these interviews in between the songs, and one of them was really funny. It was him talking about how they shared the same record company. So there was a studio. There's a really good studio, and a kind of studio. And it was they shared that record company with Led Zeppelin at the time. That Led Zeppelin was just brand new and kind of like trying to get a record deal, and they'd just gotten one with their record company. But Jethro Tull was ahead of them, had a couple albums, but wasn't super famous, but was better. Was making more money. So he kind of looked down at them a little bit. They always got the good one. They always got the good one. And then Robert Plant always got the kind of not so good one. Uh-huh. So he said, I was passing him in the hallway one day, and I said, with your lyrics, with my lyrics and your singing, we would be quite a little rock band. And then he goes, what I did not know is that they were using his lyrics. So he never spoke with me again. But everything he says comes off like a little bit of a bite anyway, because he's so like posh. So the fact that he's getting the better studio, and then he's like, insulting his lyrics. he's like, forget this guy, man. Isn't that funny?
So Jethro Tull was a rock band that used a flute, incorporated the flute?
Ian Anderson was a flautist. Yeah, it was like a rock flute. Yeah, like... Yeah, really intense, really good. I'll play you a track after.
An electric
flute? No, man, a flute.
A straight up flute?
Yeah,
a
flute. Yeah.
Interesting.
Into a microphone. Flute hero. Insane. Yeah.
And then Outkast recently had... Or Andre 3000. He released a flute.
Little known fact.
A flute album.
Influenced by Ian Anderson.
This is the last year.
Huge fans.
Andre released a flute album completely.
Really?
Yeah, completely. And people were kind of making fun of it.
Oh, no way. Are you serious?
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's he is wild. The Ian Anderson of rap. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
They said it couldn't be done.
There's a song on the album Songs from the Wood called Pea Broke Cap in Hand. And there's a little... There's a solo in there that I'm going to play for you after this.
Okay.
It's going to blow your mind. Yeah, because it's amazing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It seems contradictory, but...
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A rock band with a flute, with a flute lead. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
What was our big hit? Aqualung? Is that the
Aqualung. Aqualung was Locomotive big. Breath. Thick as a Brick. Teacher. Yeah.
Do you ever feel like... Oh, this is going to be maybe a weird conversation starter, but like...
Wait. So, in keeping with...
you're going to derail this flute conversation?
When did you start caring about that?
Like, so musical instruments, does it seem a little random? Which ones are huge? What instruments come together to create an orchestra? Because musical instruments really could be made of anything, could have like any amount of strings. Now, I'm not a musical theory major.
Clearly.
But it's like...
They can't have any amount of strings.
What's the process in the initial invention of music?
Wow.
Musical instruments.
We're going back to cave days right now. People need to, like, right?
It's like, who made a saxophone that shape?
Oh, why like not? Was the initial...
Yeah, why
started
not?
With, like, just a metal, like, a thing, and then they went, thing.
And then they probably grew
from there. Hey, we can make a little more
resonance. We add a parabola.
So there's more resonance. And then they're like, oh, we could build that bell out. That kind of thing. It's probably just evolved.
Yeah.
And certain things just evolved based on necessity for the sound.
Right.
So they went in different directions. There's French horns, trombones. And if you're talking about horns.
Yeah.
Big Chicago fan.
Yeah. But then at some point they stopped. They just thought, oh, we got a good model, kind of like with the toothbrush.
Oh, I see what you mean. We are not evolving new instruments.
There's not a lot of innovation going on. There's not a clarinet 12.
Yeah, nailed it. Yeah. Really? Looking at an oboe going, really? That's it? Not going to change that at all.
Yeah.
That'd be a funny press conference every year where they unveil this year's models, like the iPhone with, but with clarinets.
Clarinet 222.
Clarinet Pro, this one, Max Pro.
Yeah.
So that was my idea. So not as crazy as it sounded.
No, it makes sense, right? Actually. It's an interesting thought. It's a really interesting thought.
Yeah.
We're
the three to answer it, really.
Well,
bring it to the table.
You have it sounds like you have a pretty encyclopedic knowledge of music from your
Not
disc
really,
jockeying days.
You just happened to hit the one I okay. Yeah, I had like a top 10 like greatest wedding hits. You know, chicken dance.
That's great.
Yeah, Colin's notorious for working in Jethro Tull all of his interviews.
Yeah, you guys go back and have 20 podcasts where I talk about Jethro Tull.
That's all he talks about.
How did he get us to do that? It seemed like our idea, didn't it?
Yeah. Wow, he like incepted us.
he was so manipulative.
He was planting seeds ever since he got into the studio.
Just like Jethro Tull.
He's like, that.
That's amazing. Man,
wow. And the way you set that up so the audience is going to understand it too, because.
And we never saw Colin again. That's wild. Wow. Oh. Okay, do you have any more music theory related questions to
I'm
ask?
Good.
You were asking about Origins. So that's where that all started.
Yeah.
So, yeah, DJing and you know, got me comfortable. So I hit the road pretty fast. And then I just did 6 or 7 years living in a car, man. My stuff was in storage. And wow. I was just cruising around like you do and playing the weirdest gigs. And then I met my wife now. She was living in Monterey, and I met her and started hanging out with her. And then my storage unit got broken into where I had my stuff, my personal stuff in LA. And so I took all my stuff out of there, put it in a truck, and I was like, just telling this girl I'm dating, I'm like, hey, I need to put my stuff somewhere, so I got to go find another storage unit. She goes, just bring it to my garage. I have a garage. And I was like, okay. So I put it in the garage. And then like 6 more months into our relationship, and I'm flying in and out of San Jose so I can hang around with her and see her, you know, spend time with her. And I'm like, you know, technically, we're living together. I live at your house. Like, my stuff is my stuff. That's where it is. So, yeah.
You've got my Jethro Tull albums.
Yeah. I think we're living. We were like, whoa, that realization was, yeah. So anyway, we married and we were out of Monterey for a little while, and then we moved down to LA. So I spent a lot of it out of LA. But I was still working, I mean, still doing the road from a car for a while. So my first 7 years probably was just road dogging in a car. Wow. And then I started getting to where I would fly some, and then got to the point where I was flying everything.
That's cool. Wow. You were telling us you had a crazy one-nighter story.
I have a lot of those, but my favorite one was in Georgia, where I live now, but it was in some inland town. I live out on the coast, but so I show up for this one-nighter. You guys have done these, like a bar, a comedy bar.
Yes. And all this. Yeah, yes.
So I show up, and it's...
was it a triple run?
It was not. No. This was beyond those at this point. Or maybe I was still doing them, but this was on the East Coast. It's a comedy zone. And so I show up and I have my itinerary or email or whatever I wrote down from the phone call they gave me. And so I go to this, I show up at what I think is the right place, and I tell the guy I'm here for the comedy. It's like 2 in the afternoon, here for the comedy show at the bar you're having at 8. And he's like, comedy. No, I don't know. And I was like, oh, I'm at the wrong spot. So he goes, let me ask Bill. And I go, who is Bill the owner? He goes, yeah, Bill's fishing. And so he calls Bill, catches Bill. Bill answers his phone on the bass boat, which back then, this is 2004 maybe, that was huge. This guy's going to answer his phone on a bass boat. So he's clearly just rolling in it. So he answers his phone. Yeah, you know. He says, yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, Bill says we got comedy. And I'm like, cool. And he goes, you want to do it right now? I go, no, it's 2 in the afternoon. You don't want to do that. Yeah. What are we talking about? So there's like 8 regulars at the bar that are all watching TV, you know? And I go, he goes, cool, when do you want to do it? I go, like, oh, you know, like 8 probably is what I have. That's what I have on my itinerary. He's like, cool, see you at 8. I was like, okay, I'm going to go check in the hotel. So I go check in the hotel, come back at like 7:30. And I was like, hey, so I walk in, same 8 regulars, no new people. Swear. TVs are on. And he goes, hey, it's Colin, right? I go, yeah. Oh, man, great to see you. You ready to do the comedy? I'm like, well, you know, we can wait till the crowd, you know. He goes, the crowd? Yeah, I go, yeah. He goes, okay. So we wait till 8, nobody changes, same people. So he goes, you ready? And I was like, sure. Yeah, okay, let's do it. I go, can you introduce me? There's like there's a stage that's like 5 feet tall, and it's over there. It's 5 feet, and it's like where they put a guitar songwriter sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And I go, do you want me to do it over there? And he goes, yeah, that's perfect, man. And I'm like, okay. I go, you want to introduce me? And he goes, yeah, I'll introduce you. And he goes, cool. Colin, right? He goes, hey, everybody, this is Colin. And he introduced me. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. So I run up there. I'm like, hey, everybody, I'm a comedian. I had to explain what was happening. They're watching TV. I go, we can turn off the TV, and I'm doing stand-up comedy, which is, I was so new at it that I'm like, I guess this happens. So I'm like trying to like roll with it. And they were the nicest. They were like, what? Turn off the TV? Why? I was like, well, because it's stand-up is better if you're like paying attention. And they're like, okay. So they turn off the TV, but they're skeptical. Like, okay, I don't see how that helps. And then, and they're looking at me, and they're just staring at me. And I'm doing, you know, but hey, I'm doing whatever I had. I don't know whatever that was, you know, but it felt like that's what it felt like. In my memory, it's even worse. So then they're just staring at me. There's just nothing. They're just like, this is weird. Why is that guy talking? You know, they're just watching. And then finally, this old lady just breaks from the crowd with a jar of pickles in her hand and walks up and interrupts me in mid-setup of a joke that's not going to work and is holding up this jar of pickles and looking at me. and I'm like, I stop talking mid-sentence and I go, those are pickles. And somebody yells from the back, best darn pickles in three counties. And everybody's like, woo! And I was like, all right. Okay, they go ahead, man, try one. So I grab the jar of pickles and I put it on the stool, and then I start to finish my sentence, and she's still standing there looking at me, and they're like, they're waiting. They're like, nah, we don't care what you're talking about. You got to try a pickle. So I'm like, okay, so now try a pickle. Okay. So I open it up, and I eat a pickle. Best pickle I've probably ever had, even to now. It really was the best darn pickle in three counties. And I'm like, whoa, that is a good pickle. And they're like, whoa, they'll start cheering. And she's like, turns around and is like, yeah. Biggest response. I was like, that is amazing. They love that I ate that pickle. And then she goes back and sits down. And I'm like, now I got them, right? I got them. This is great. You know, they're with me. Mm-hmm. I got them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I start in again. Nothing. Nothing. And I look at the pickles and I'm like, punchline, eat a pickle. Woo! Yes. Like, ate the whole jar and killed. Every punchline had a pickle at the end. That is not an exaggeration. I ate that whole jar of pickles.
That's funny.
Whoa. So those were some homegrown, home brine pickles?
Homemade, probably grown by her, canned by her, recipe from her grandparents. She's a great grandparent, probably. Maybe great great. They all probably were lived and died on those bar stools.
I want to know
they were making pickles.
How she decided that was the right moment to bring the pickles up.
I think she just was trying to bail me out. She was like, this guy needs help. Like,
yeah. I got just the thing.
What fixes everything in life? Yeah. My pickles.
It's almost like a folktale. This just like legendary lady who helps performers with a jar of pickles.
She just shows up at all bad performances. She's having a really bad bombing. Gig.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This lady comes out of the crowd with a cape with a pee on it. And a jar of pickles.
And you're so, if you're 5 feet up, you're so high. That seems you're like, so tall up there in this room with eight people. Wow, what a show.
Yep. And that's just one. I mean, man. We showed up one time over there in the Southeast to a show, and the guy was like, we don't have a show. And I was like, there's no show? No. And we told the booking agency that, and we keep telling them that, and they keep sending comics. I was like, what? They knew? What? I drove 5 hours? And he just refused to stop sending comedians, because the guy he goes, I'm going to write you a check. Yeah, dang it. I don't want you to have to go through that. He'd give me money. And I guess this booker was just like, I guess he just keeps giving him checks and keeps sending them till he stops paying him.
Easy money. Wow, that's so funny. Oh.
So you go from these insane shows. Over time, they're probably getting a little less, you know.
Yeah, then it's
idiosyncratic.
Then it's more, then it's, just clubs and, well, I don't know. They get weird, you know, corporates. And then, remember 2020? I built a studio in my yard and started doing virtual corporates.
Oh yeah.
And
cool.
I loved them.
Really? Most people hated them.
Most people hated them because they did it wrong.
Filmed like you're on a stage in your backyard?
So I have a studio, a 10 by 16 shed that I built out with soundproofed it with backdrops, lighting, ATEM switcher, multi-camera shoot. And I produce it from under the shot.
And, no way.
That's awesome.
And it looks like a multi-camera shoot.
Whoa.
And I do a pre-event meeting where I assign them, I have them assign 24 people from the gallery that have skin in the game. It's on Zoom, you know,
typically,
or that kind of thing, Teams. And you assign 25 people from the gallery that have skin in the game. So, like, this is the sales guy. There's always going to be the sales guy. And then there's, like, you know, the CEO's got to be there or whatever. And then, or his assistant or both. And then like, kind of goes down from there. And you got all the fun people in there. And you can hear them and see them. And then if other people want to have their audio on, that's fine. But we don't need to look at you. And if you got babies crying or you're mowing a lawn, maybe not. Don't have your audio on. So, and then we just instruct everybody that way. And then that mitigated a lot of the garbage. And then in that pre-event meeting, I had like just a page of questions I would ask them to kind of get the lowdown on the company and the history and all this. And then I just took a little time, wrote a little bit to kind of talk about what that was and a couple little jokes, whatever. And I would also find ways that it related to my material. And so it just was effortless. I just had the most fun doing that. And it made so much money.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because you're probably the only one doing it well.
No, everybody else had it. Like, I would do shows where they booked two comics. It'd be me with my full-on system and my setup, my studio and preparation. And then it'd be another comic who's, like, in front of a curtain with half their AirPods in.
Yep.
And a kid running around, and they're yelling at him, and, you know, five cats, not saying.
Yeah, the cats ruined a lot of Zoom shows for me.
Yeah.
And I kept explaining, it doesn't smell here, I promise. It smells good over here.
He kept asking me.
Does
this Zoom call smell like cats?
Okay, so you do these shows, you do Zoom shows. Before that, though, you performed at Dry Bar, recorded your first Dry Bar special 2018. You told
2018,
me
which is 6 years ago, man. I can't even realize that until like a couple days ago.
And your initial impressions of Dry Bar going in, thought it was just a corporate.
Yeah, Kellen turned me on to it, and Kellen's a good friend of mine. I used to bring him on the road.
Cool.
Yeah, yep. I put him through some weird condos, like staying in weird condos that had rooms that were locked that you could see through there was like glass in the door, and then it would have like a curtain, and you look in there, and it just like was a weird attic room with stuff in it. You're like, what is in there? Yeah. Staying in this little house for like, yeah. I mean, there was like some weird experiences that. One time, Kellen and I were on the road. This is another road story. Okay, so can I do this?
Yeah,
absolutely.
So Kellen and I were on the road, and we're at this condo. In Kansas City, and the guy, all of a sudden, the power goes off, and we're like, "Well, the power's off." So I call the guy, and he goes, "Yeah, something's wrong with the power company. There's a billing, or I don't know." And then later that night, when we're at the show, he goes, "Yeah, tomorrow we're moving," and I'm like, "What?" So he had not paid the bill because he's moving. So we're in a condo, an apartment, and we are now going to help him move everything from this apartment to another apartment. This is his thing. So he got kicked out, basically evicted, and we were staying in it. So we had to then help him move like it was our problem. And then he goes, I'm not helping you. I'm not doing that. And Kellen was like, is this normal? I'm like, no, this isn't normal. So then we got a hotel, me and Kellen, and then we help him load the stuff in a trailer, all the stuff that was in the condo. And we show up that night to the next night to the show, and it's all in front of the comedy club under a tarp, like a junkyard or a trailer park. I mean, it was nuts. They just had it all piled up against the wall.
It's the only place it could go.
Coffee tables and beds and like just like a tarp kind of loosely wrapped.
And that was what you're performing. Like it was in the back. Did you say this was the back of the comedy club?
Or no, the front wall of the comedy club. So when you pull up and there's the comedy club, there's a trailer park looking scene right in front.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, wild.
It's just like the comedians tonight helped move that. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. But, so Kellen got to experience that. Why did I bring up Kellen again?
He tipped you off about Dry Bar.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. He was telling me about Dry Bar, and he had done the first round. And then I had him out to Savannah where I live to do something. And I love Kellen. I just think he's one of the best comics ever. And
he's so funny.
Yeah. And he, so he connected me. And then I thought, well, that's great. I'll get a five camera shoot and use it as a corporate tool, you know, to get corporates. And I was making a lot of money doing cruise ships and starting to get some corporates. I'm like, I need a good corporate tape. And so I even negotiated a little hard on the pay. I was like, we'll see, you know, whatever. And like, and then I got here and realized I had no idea it was going to benefit me beyond that.
Right. Yeah.
So, then I, did it and it felt great. And then, but I was like, great. Now I kept getting on about like, hey, I want that video. And they're like, well, yeah, we're going to da, 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 da. And then eventually, like I was telling you, Alex started tagging stuff and in the social media stuff. And when Facebook kind of started biting and getting traction and he started hashtagging at different videos and mine, I believe was the first one to really spark. And it was the parenting clip. And okay. It just got in with the right groups or something, and bam, dude, it was overnight. I'm watching this thing. I remember where I was sitting in my kitchen. I would check it every 10 minutes and be like, whoa, 10,000 more people. You know, it was wild.
Yeah.
And it went to millions, and I'm like, this is
That's
nuts.
So cool.
Nothing moved the needle for me more. And I've done Showtime. I've done Last Call with Carson Daly. I've done, you know, Comedy Time and all the other stuff you do in L.A. And lots of club stuff and, you know.
Yeah.
That nothing moved the needle like that. Until that, and then I did an album. That because of that, I was like, I really need to do a clean album too. So I did a clean album, specifically clean album to go on XM, and then that took off too.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I think most comics that were in the first couple seasons were just like, it'll be a good tape. So that was it. That's great, but yeah,
yeah, really, really moved the needle because it did work for corporates, but it was right there on the internet, mm-hmm. and also then it became this badge of honor that I had one at all, much less a really good one, and it just became easy to get corporates. I was always first on the list.
That's awesome.
So paid a lot of bills, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
And now you're back. You've built up some material since 2018 that you're ready to.
Yeah, well, so I built up a bunch of material and then put it in a special in Scotland.
Right.
I did a special in May, so I had to build another 25.
Oh, wow.
Since
that's
May?
A good turnaround. Mm-hmm.
Wow, okay.
And it's tight. It's tight.
Yeah.
It's good.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. I'm pretty close to commitment to memory. I don't know. I don't think we can cue card up there or somewhere, but there's just, you know how like the problem is the transition. Like you get done with this one bit and then you're like, that's the end of that bit. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, what's the other block that comes next? Yeah. What's the transition? So I have to like get the ideas. The idea is the grout to me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people will tape notes up behind the speakers up there.
That's what I'll do. Yeah, because all I really need is the block transition. So like when I know when I'm done with the bit about glasses and you know that I'll the next block begins and that's 5 to 7 minutes and then at the end of that one I'll probably be swimming in the what was it? Oh yeah, that's right.
So wait, you recorded in Scotland though? That's that what you said?
I recorded one in Scotland and that was called One Good Molten, and that's about trying to find one good molten in history.
We were doing some research before the podcast.
Big time.
But I saw the article about you going to find your lineage. That was part of that
thing.
That
was what
too.
I did. Uh-huh. I went to England and I found GinaNet, I found my 27th grand. So all the way back, line back through to Great Yarmouth in the 1400s, there's a little bit of a jump, but there's only one line. And my Thomas de Molten was the first Molten that would have made him, generation-wise, the 27th grandfather. My 27th grandfather. Wow. Thomas de Molten in 1250. And then his father was a Saxon and his mother was a Norman. So if you know anything about the Norman invasion, how England was created, the Normans came through and conquered the Celts, the Britons, but couldn't conquer the Saxons in East Anglia there.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, man, we got to do deals with these guys. And that's what they did. They did land deals with them and stuff and married them in and all that. And that's what they did there. And there's multi. It's like if you're looking at England and there's the horn, you know, kind of over to the right, there's Baywash right there. In those fens, they call them.
Okay.
It used to be marsh in that. And a lot of it is still marsh. Molten Sea's End, Molten Chapel. Those towns are there still.
Wow. So OG England. Just
right. OG. Yeah. One of the coolest things is there's the Ello stone is in Molten, England. Molten Sea's End, really.
Yeah.
And it's sitting in a field surrounded by hedges so tractors won't hit it. And it's as tall as that camera, maybe. It's like that tall. And it's just a stone, but it's where they met the meeting of the hundreds, and supposedly, according to the history, I met with like medievalists and all these people.
Yeah.
Thomas de Molten was the one who set that stone and was like, we're going to meet, the leaders of the Wapentakes are going to meet here, and we're going to vote on what we're going to do by raising our swords. You know, so like you raise your sword for I know, whatever, damn no. And you decide who gets killed for what they did, maybe. I don't know what. That's probably crazy. That's all there was back then. But that was, that Elostone was the very beginning of the, where they developed from that, the judicial system that became England's judicial system, and then became ours. So the beginning of our judicial system was my 27th grandfather putting a rock on the ground and going, everybody here now with your swords. Is that wild?
That's cool. Amazing.
Yeah. How did that feel? I feel like you felt so connected to your history. It was all wild.
Yeah, I walked into a pub and I'm like hanging out in this pub and everybody was like kind of a thick-shouldered guy who like laughed loud and they're all hugging each other. I'm like, I found my people.
No way.
It was so cool. I was like, I got to tell my wife like all the stuff that she really doesn't like about me. I can't help it. It's in my blood. It's my heritage. All doing it.
Man. So that's, that whole journey is on your, on that special One Good Molten.
Yeah, man. And we're still editing that. My creative partner and I, Michael Malone is amazing. He's my guy. And we create everything together. And he and I are still working on the documentary part, and then we're going to put the special in it and cut it all together, and it's going to be really, really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's going to be really original and really cool. And
really,
we're working on the
that.
Style. He's a Wes. He leans toward Wes Anderson style when he's choosing what to do, and I really love Guy Ritchie. So we're looking at kind of how to like blend those two on this one.
I like the mixture of that. That's cool.
We're like speedy at spots and really deep at others and super crazy. Because we did a lot, we got a lot of footage, and then we're yet to get the talking head stuff. So we're going to build the story arc and drive
Sweet.
It.
So are you going back over there to film stuff, or just the rest
not
is
to
here?
Film. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to buy a house in Moulton, and I'm going to buy the lordship.
You can buy it?
Yes. It's currently owned by the Stoughton family. There's just a guy bought it, and he died, and his wife has it. But the kids, from what I understand, from the guy who owns the windmill, or runs the windmill, it's a nonprofit, but the Moulton windmill is the highest working grain mill in the UK.
Wow.
Yeah. In Moulton, England. Yeah.
So if you get the lordship, do you get the wind? I don't know what lordship entails.
So the guy, Alan, told me that they don't really want the lordship. When you have a lordship, and I may be wrong about that. I'm going to find out. I have to talk to her and her family. But the lordship, the way a lordship works in a title in England, you can, from what I understand, if the main green, the central green, they have to ask you if they're gonna have a farmer's market.
Oh yeah,
I think that's all there is to it.
That kind of power would corrupt.
Yeah. You'd be like walking through town, spitting on children. Have you a cat? Out of my way.
Mine now.
Mine.
Just taking people's cats.
Yeah.
Army of dumb cats.
Yeah.
So that's apparently how it works. But I'm excited because I want to be Lord Molten.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I am Colin Molten. I want to be Lord Molten.
Molten.
And I want to have a little flat right there by the big chapel. There's a huge Molten chapel that was there in the, we don't know when they built it exactly, but they have a font, a christening font from the 900s that was brought up probably from Ely by the Saxons, probably by Brictive, which would have been my 28th grandfather, and it was sitting in the graveyard. They found it in the graveyard. It had been removed at some point, but they had it in there. Yeah.
That kind of history blows my mind.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. I can't even comprehend.
Yeah.
But I want to get a little flat right there by that central screen square, and then a bungalow, they call it, rather. A nice little house. And it's the Fens, man. So it's all like a farming community. It's super small village. And there's Molten Post Office, Molten Butchery, Molten Season, Molten Fish and Chips. So everything's Molten.
That's
and it's
so cool.
Just one little block.
Wow.
And everything else is just cute little bungalows with gardens. And it's just amazing.
And are there a ton of Moultons in that town?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Really?
None.
So when you show up...
I was expecting quite the, the reception, but it didn't happen. British people are so dry. I showed them the ID at the store, and they were like... I go, yeah, Colin Molten. That's why I'm here in Molten. And she was like, lovely.
Did you have the camera crew with
the
you?
The joke I do in the special, I don't know if I should do this. Was I do the special, but I what would you like to drink? That's why I'm here in Moulton. so funny. But yeah, that's kind of the vibe over there. Is like, so what? So you know, that's here pretty I am. Awesome. Super excited.
Get that lordship, and I think things will change.
Yeah, get a little respect spice for things that. Up in Molten England.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That's so funny.
Isn't that wild though?
Yeah, that's so cool.
And, you know, from what I understand, the English people could not track their heritage that closely because all the stuff got burned in the 1700s. But my family left out of Great Yarmouth in the 1600s, 1638. They founded Hampton, New Hampshire.
Okay,
John Moulton, I think. And then he had a couple of kids. And then by 1776, one of the kids was out of New Hampshire, was Jonathan Moulton. And he was the Brigadier General of the United States north of New Hampshire north.
Oh, cool.
So during the Revolutionary War, he was the secretary or the, what do they say? Secretary of Security. When they signed the Declaration of Independence.
Whoa, John that's Benjamin. Awesome. Yeah.
And they always, if you look him up, you can look him up. And Google it. And it says he did a deal with the devil. The townspeople hated him. That's where all this started from. I didn't want to be like my dad because he made some bad choices. I'm like, maybe I could be like my granddad. And my granddad had this history, you know, it's in the special, but he was a vaudeville comedian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but don't want to be like him. And then Jonathan Moulton was like hated by the townspeople, buried in an unmarked grave because they were just going to desecrate it anyway, that kind of thing. And so I was like, man, I got to find one good Moulton in history.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just kept going and going and going back.
That premise is awesome.
And there's none, but there's a windmill.
There was none. There's a windmill. Well, that's just it.
The best windmill.
The windmill was built with stones from the chapel that he had originally built in the manor because he took their. He didn't let the people build a chapel, and he did it. And that's like the townspeople wanted to do it, but he did it, and they were so mad at him that so I don't know if this is actually accurate, but it looks like some of the stones in the base of that thing are from that chapel. So kind of like they took the stones from that chapel. They did disassemble it when he died. Uh-huh. They took it down. So they hated him so much they built the highest windmill in England.
So we may remember our hate for him.
As a monument to how much they despised my ancestor. And they built it high enough in case he tried to sneak into heaven so God could see.
Is that's for real?
No. Sort of. Well, maybe, because some of the stones are in there, you know.
Yeah.
Supposedly they're in that and they're in the chapel. Some stuff over in Hall Beach. But yeah.
That's so
cool. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah, that's an amazing story.
But yeah, the main thing is just like, you know, when you start looking for a good, pure person in history, good luck. I mean, look around your house. Sure. Like, we all are a little bit of
we're going to have some baggage.
A little bit of that. So, yeah.
Man.
Wow. Well, that's great. I feel like we're running low on time.
I think so, too.
But we could talk to you forever, Colin.
I'm genuinely stoked to see when that whole special
it's
documentary
gonna be really
comes out.
Good. I have no doubt in my mind. When Michael comes up with an idea, I go, okay, cool. Like, just point me in a direction. He's Sweet. Got style, yeah.
Do you have a date set for when maybe or like later this year? Just
I
whenever?
Think that we'll be done by summer probably with editing and everything.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Are you going to try and pitch it up places to get it streaming or are you going to
release
on your own?
Or? Plan. No, actually, it's going to be 800 Pound Gorilla Media.
Oh, cool.
I believe owns it. Yeah. They own the special.
Yeah.
The documentary I paid for, but we'll probably do some deal because they wanted to do this special, but the special was on its own was like weird. It was UK style. So this was just different. It's not like what I'm normally like poppy and charactery. And so we decided it'd be better in the special. I mean, in the documentary.
You had to make yourself a little dry, like the.
I don't know, man. It was more like just a different pacing and different feel. Yeah.
Did you do shows? Sorry, I know we just said we're going to end, but now I have another question.
That's okay.
Did you do other shows over there to prepare
I'm
for
I'm running
prepare?
Like I'm producing a show. That's fine. Don't mind. Look at it. Don't look at it.
You and me. You and
we're,
me.
We're out of discs.
The tape is. Ian Anderson. Call Ian Anderson and see if he's got some tape.
My question was, though, did you do shows in preparation over there to get the style correct?
Yes,
or was that a thing that you were like, oh,
and
I need to change?
I learned right away. I'm like, this stuff I'm doing isn't going to work at
really?
All. And certain, yeah, for real. I started watching Greg Davies, and like some of these guys are like really talking about something, but also kind of big and character. And I really like that style. I really liked it. I think I still have more to learn, but I really want to go over there and learn it. I want to get to Scotland, England, and do a year or two here and there.
That's cool.
And really grind on it, because I feel like I could do really well in that environment now that I'm older and got a lot of stories and love it.
Well, get your lordship, take over that lordship. Comedy scene.
Yeah, Moulton Comedy Club.
Dude, can you imagine being introduced as Lord Moulton?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so
that
cool.
On a stage and it's an arena and they're like, oh, Lord, it's Moulton, Moulton. That's what I was just trying to do at the store.
Yeah.
Lord Moulton's return.
Very nice. Very nice. Or what she said, that's fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lovely.
Lovely. Lovely.
Lovely. Lovely. Lovely. Yeah. A whole audience of people just going lovely.
Lovely. Lovely.
2,000 people. Yeah. Lovely.
Lovely. Lovely.
Lovely.
Lovely.
I'm in, actually. I like the sound of it. It's nice.
Yeah, that sounds good.
It's almost better than clapping, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Lovely. Lovely. How would that sound? 2,000 people going lovely, 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 lovely.
All in agreement.
Lovely.
Oh, you got an applause break? I got a lovely break, so.
Yeah, lovely break. You know, that image sounds like a Monty Python sketch.
Yeah, it does.
A bunch of people all going, lovely, lovely, lovely,
lovely,
lovely, lovely, lovely.
Oh, man, that's funny. That's great.
Well, are there any things you'd like to say to your Dry Bar fans that'll be watching this before we get out of here?
Oh.
You're lovely fans.
Dude, I was... So, to the Dry Bar fans, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. I didn't know it was going to be a thing, and it's a thing. It's affected my life, and now I'm doing another one I'm super excited to do. So what a great great audience it's been. And I like it when you guys argue. That's really fun to watch. When somebody gets mad about the chicken joke, I've got chickens, they're smart, and then somebody, and then you guys just pile on them. It's just comedy, dummy! And the fights are fun to watch on social media, but that's all I watch. But thank you for your support, man, in a huge way, because you've changed my life. I was not, I was a clean comedian, but I wasn't a clean comedian. And that's what this special is going to answer, is can you be too clean?
We await the answer to that question.
Oh, yeah, it's the closing.
Oh, that's great. Oh,
closing piece, yeah. I open it with that thought and I close it with that thought.
That's
awesome. Cool. To me, pretty good.
Cool. Well, I'm stoked to see it.
Yeah, and I'm stoked to see your Scottish one as well, that documentary. Cool stuff coming out. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for
today,
yeah, Colin. It was fun. I want to do this every week.
For sure.
We'll fly in. We'll get you out of here.
Well, great. And thank you to the Dry Bar fans. Check our website for upcoming specials. Jordan's is dropping soon. And Colin, less soon, but we'll be dropping.
But it will come.
Yeah. We'll be coming soon.
And we have one last question.
Okay.
Lean in.
Okay.
Does this podcast smell like cats?
We take great pride in that question.
Categorically, no, sir. It smells lovely.